Hey, welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitter. Sorry we're late. I was taking on Mark Stoops. And back for the Roush Hour, Nick Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio. How's it going, brother?
It's going, man. It's a beautiful fall day. I don't know why I have sirens going off right now around my house. There's people cutting grass. It's a little bit chaotic, but that's what you expect in the Commonwealth this time of year. So fired up to be here to talk some ball after an awesome weekend. Although I gotta say, Mike, can we get the folks at ESPN to stagger some of these games out a little bit better? I felt like we had the awesome nooner between Bama and Missouri, and then afternoon was fine. But it was like at night, I just couldn't. My neck hurts from trying to keep up with all the games that were going on. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I forgot to tell you this. We have never had a guest on the show have such a negative reaction as you provided. So thank you for that. Last week, when you use this term, I'd like you to explain it, because I honestly never heard it till you said it. But you said you were logo watcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you explain that for the audience? Because they were pissed.
Well, because there is a – it was my friend Freddie Maggard used to use it, where when you watched, like, let's say it was like Florida, Kentucky, right? Take the logos off back in 2015 when Muschamp was there, 2014 or something like that. And there weren't a ton of differences, right? But, like, people just got caught up in the logos and were like, oh, well, of course, Florida's going to kill them. That's true, but sometimes you need to just trust the logos because, like, those programs win for a reason. And saw that with Alabama, where that game, it went exactly how I said it would go. Right? Well,
exactly. So I wanted to credit you, because all the damn people that went AWOL, Bama beat Missouri, Georgia beat Auburn, yep. Texas beat Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma's a massive logo, but Tennessee beat Arkansas. LSU beat South Carolina. Hell, maybe that's just as simple as we should do this. Just look at the damn logo. Nothing to be mad about if you're 100% right. You know what?
Right, exactly. Exactly. And especially, like, that's like one thing. Like, that's an easy thing to do. But then you dig into quarterbacks and coaching. Like, coaching can make up for a lot. Beamer somehow gets his guys playing in close games that they probably shouldn't be. Drink at home is great at making sure his guys are up for the challenge. But in that game in particular, Ty Simpson is a better quarterback than Bo Perbula. We didn't know what we were going to get really out of Simpson coming into the season. I think there was a lot of reasons to be apprehensive initially, because it's like, well, if he couldn't do it before, why is he going to do it now? He gets comfortable with Ryan Grubb, and then all of a sudden they're off to the races. We saw Ty Simpson in clutch moments rise to the occasion. And, boy, that fourth down throw, I forget who caught it, but, damn, that was a pass.
Yeah, I think it was a true freshman that, again, it was like the last guy that you'd anticipate get the football. And I'll even give Missouri credit. It, you know, that's as covered as cover can get.
Yeah, it was a perfect pass. And he trusted even that his receiver to make the play. I mean, perfect throw, clutch throw. And that's what Bama was. They were clutch. Jam Miller ran the ball well. And then, boy, when Missouri, they got a chance. It's Bo Perbula time. Let's see what you got. Dude, he saw the fear of God was in his eyes. In that first drive, like, you knew when he stepped on that field, like, oh, this ain't happening. And I know he got one explosive that got him down to like the 40 or something, but like that, the deer was in the middle of the headlights, and he was not going to lead them on a game winning drive or a game tying drive. It just wasn't happening. And you know what? That's not to say that he can, it's never going to happen for Perbula, but right here in the here and now, not going to happen, especially in a game where your best player, Ahmad Hardy, only had, what, 52 yards rushing? I mean, if I told you, Mike, before that game that Ahmad Hardy was in at 52 yards rushing, you would have thought Bama won by 17 points probably. So credit to Missouri for hanging in there, for staying in the fight. But ultimately, when push came to shove, the better quarterback won. And, boy, that guy, he might be the best quarterback, not only in the SEC, but in all of college football.
Yeah, we're calling him Little Bo Peep now here on this show. So where does Missouri go from here, Nick? Is it I don't think they got exposed, but, even the most objectionable or objective Missouri fan would say that was their toughest test, and they failed it. If they, can they get up off the mat, you think, and beat Auburn? Because if not, I mean, this season could go sideways in a hurry.
Yeah, I think Drink, I trust him enough to have those guys ready to play, but it still is there's a hurdle to get over that. And, we saw what Auburn did to the running game. I think that would be the part that would worry me. And I know they still got – I don't have the stats right in front of me. I didn't have those pulled up. They still ran the ball okay. But, Hardy has to be the guy for them. He just does. So that's the part where I would get – he's ran for $163. That's a pretty – that's a solid Saturday, right? You did pretty darn good. But you need to get more out of Hardy. Moving forward, it Missouri feels kind of where I thought they would be in that – upper tier of good teams that you just mix them all in the pot, you pull them out, and anybody can win on any given Saturday. It's just the cumulative effect, right? How much does it weigh him down? And that's what I would worry about if I was the Auburn Tigers next week, is just the cumulative effect of all those losses and how gut punching that one was. But we can get to that later. I don't know about you, Mike, but it's got to be real agitating to see Bama doing what they're doing.
I think the hottest team in the country, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there's going to come a time this season where they have a letdown, right? You look at that schedule; it's just tough. Something's going to happen. They're going to lose one more game, but that's still probably good enough to be in the SEC championship game. And the defense is playing better. Bama, we were supposed to be laughing at you this year. Come on, let us have some fun at your expense.
Well, we got that opportunity for about 6 days when we all thought Kalen DeBoer was going to get his ass fired, which I hear behind the scenes, Nick, they were making moves to I know his buyout's insane. Mm-hmm. They were raising the money in case they needed to do it. And now that's laughable because he may be coach of the year.
Maybe that's just what he needs is just get all the heat on him or just play good teams, right? That record against top 15 opponents. I mean, my God, that guy, say what you want about all of the other stuff about him because he is really deboring. But that guy in big games, dude, he just wins. He just wins. He just keeps doing it. And we can't keep letting him get away with this. We just can't. Bam, right. Come back down to earth.
And unfortunately for Tennessee, they're ranked this week, so that's not going to be good. What might get old to boring is South Carolina and Auburn, because those are going to be and Southern or Eastern Illinois, whatever the hell Illinois that is, because he struggles against unranked teams. That seems to be the only thing that can be the kryptonite to Alabama and DeBoering.
Well, in South Carolina, I know their fans, they're not big fans of me because I love to dunk on their coach. But South Carolina does have the star power. And especially if that game is at night, crazy things can happen at Williams-Brice Stadium. And this is the part where I need to just tip my imaginary cap to South Carolina, because they should have got their ass kicked in Death Valley. They really should have. And LSU, credit to their defense, but it doesn't matter. I don't know if LSU has the best defense in the SEC. I don't think I can say that confidently at all, but they create the most chaos. Blake Baker has done a great job of every important play, he's dialing something up and it's making the quarterback be a hero. And damn it, Lenora Sellers just keeps doing it. I mean, how many times are you watching that guy and it's just how did they not get him? It's like Harold Perkins. He's just pushing Harold Perkins off. What? Then Hyburn, whatever, 44? I don't know.
Jack Pyburn.
Pyburn. Dude, that guy, I mean, LSU's defense is the real deal. And just Sellers just – he just keeps doing it. And he doesn't have the greatest supporting cast. You know, Jenkins is all right. Harbor's okay. The tight end's okay. But Sellers just keeps doing it. And here's where I want to take this, Michael. Boy, is this going to look bad 3 years from now when Sellers is best quarterback in the NFL. I mean, I watched Louisville win 8 games with Lamar Jackson. Only 8. His last year at Louisville. Are they going to win 8? They're going to have it is a gift to be able to get a guy of this caliber. And what are they going to do with it? They're going to lose 5 games probably. Maybe 6. Hell, they might not make a bowl game. That is possible. But you cannot waste an opportunity, and South Carolina is going to waste Lenora Sellers. They are going to waste an opportunity with a generational quarterback to – you can't do that at South Carolina. Those moments are fleeting, and boy, it is just going to be coming right out of their fingertips.
Hey, shout-out Junior. He says, Mike Shula, a real man of genius.
I mean – What was weird about that game too, Mike, is they like both teams are terrible at running the ball and actually got quite a few explosive runs out of it. LSU, when are you gonna get out of your own damn way? Mike, 3 red zone turnovers? Like, okay, I maybe get the RPO pick that Nussmeier threw where he's trying to squeeze it into a tight window that he really didn't need to. He's trying to be a hero. He's had to be a hero forever. Like, aggressive mistakes happen. But you get down the goal line late. You're down on the 2, and you just go backwards. You fumble going in. Like, LSU, maybe this is the week they get it together, but it feels like they're trying to – like, they got this old house they're trying to fix. And every time they get one part of that house fixed, like, all right, shitter's finally flushing. We're good to go. Then all of a sudden the sink springs a leak, right? Green. Yeah. I'm stammering all over my words. That guy's awesome. Like, you just found a tight end from the basketball team. You have a loaded arsenal there. You finally figure out your running back situation, but Juwan Johnson fumbles going in. Like, dude, and then to make matters worse, I mean, South Carolina fumbled in what their first snap of the game, and you only kicked a field goal. I mean, they like it's all there. Just figure it out, man. Like you're right there. Just figure it out. It's so frustrating because I was a guy who was really high on them going into the year, and there's still time for them to figure it out. But you see the talent. The defense is better than expected. In fact, it's really carried them so far through the first half of the season. So I'm not giving up the faith that LSU can keep it together. And I can even see a scenario too, Mike, where A&M kind of has had it figured out the whole time. But like, how much better are they going to get? Whereas like LSU, that is where I'm telling myself, oh, the ceiling is still there. We can still grow. We can still improve. And I'm sure Brian Kelly's the man to trust.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Nick, because we were having the same conversation last night with our good friend Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports, and he said something similar. He's got faith in LSU. Nussmeier could get healthier. Maybe the offensive line figures it out. But I countered, and this is not just an LSU critique. We could turn it on Tennessee and the defense. Or there's many of these teams. At what point do we say, well, hell, this is just who they are, and maybe we need to, I don't know if it's like our preseason thoughts on these teams is still weighing on us, but we're halfway through the season. I tend to think this is kind of who these teams are. I don't know that some flip is going to be switched and a struggling LSU offense is going to turn around. A struggling Tennessee defense is going to turn it around. I think this is more of what they are.
Well, I think you're right. I like that line of thinking, but I'm still hanging on to the fact that Garrett Nussmeier can be awesome. Because like right before he threw his first interception, he's rolling out and just puts a, I mean, it was a perfect pass down the sideline where you just say, oh God, there's one of those throws. But then you see the bad decisions come up. And I think some of the bad decision-making on those throws, like, I mean, he just sailed one for no reason. Like, there was a little bit of pressure there, but he got in his own head. And I think that's his overall biggest issue, is that for his, what would it be now, 6, 17, 18 games as a starter, he's kind of had to be Superman. And I think that's forced him to try to do too much. Mm-hmm. And all right, maybe you get this running game going a little bit. You rely on it a little bit more. It takes a little bit of the pressure off. I'm still clinging to the thought that Garrett Nussmeier can mitigate some of those mistakes and see more of those flashes. I don't think he's in DJ Lagway territory yet.
Okay. Well, thank goodness for that. But, hey, I did want to add this real quick because you were talking about Sellers and what a phenomenon he is. Shout out Cole Kublik. I don't know if you saw this. He tweeted this out last night. So Sellers against LSU, right?
Mm-hmm.
22 rushing attempts for 19 yards. And you're like, oh, that's pretty ho-hum.
Yeah, how many sack yards?
But the total distance traveled by Sellers. Remember, he had 19 yards. Total distance traveled, 894 yards. Against LSU. I mean, that's like one of the most insane stats I've ever heard. He traveled 894 yards, because if you missed it, and if you're not a fan of LSU or South Carolina, there wasn't much of a reason to watch this one. But it was just him running for his life, evading pressures, breaking tackles, and you know, I'm talking like breaking six tackles to get 2 yards. That was his night there. And it goes to what you were saying of they're wasting this guy, to where if you put him on, but you know, a quality team, or at least in front of a quality offensive line, I think Sellers, all the preseason hype would have been much more warranted.
Yeah, I mean, 55 yards on 5 sacks. So add that. I mean, that's about 75, 80-ish or so on a dozen carries. Like, that's efficient as hell. And not to mention the going all over the place. And that – whew, that's just gotta suck to be a South Carolina fan. It sucks being a Kentucky fan. We got it worse. Oh, yeah, there you go. Tell yourselves that it's okay. At least we got this fun guy to watch, even though our team isn't good enough around him. Because boy, that, like, they had every chance to, like, steal that game. LSU was begging them, like, please, we don't want to win this game. And South Carolina was like, eh, sorry, not going to do it.
Well, I certainly hope after that comment, JR Gaming Live isn't a Gamecock fan. I doubt he is, but he gifted a membership, Roush, to Longhorn for Life. Welcome to the family, Longhorn.
Shout out.
And we had one other one, Jason James. We appreciate you, buddy. He gifted a membership to Rusty Bridges. Cool name. Rusty, welcome to the family, this crazy-ass family, but you're part of it now.
Ah, feels good to add one more to the family.
Hey, so who is the best team? We were talking Alabama, but one team we haven't hit on, Nick, and they have a strong case, A&M. Undefeated A&M, 6-0, just dispatched another Southeastern Conference opponent, this one by double digits, this one that is, you know, Florida's playing better than they've looked all year. Of course, it wasn't good enough, but, they, you know, and now all of a sudden their win over Texas makes them look even more quality, but A&M made quick work of them. Good. Is A&M, are they the best team in the conference?
That first throw of the game from Marcel Reed to Mario Craver.
Yeah.
It's the Shaq meme. I apologize. I was not aware of your game. but dude, if you can keep doing that, obviously that's not going to happen all the time. But like, the fact that Reed can add some explosiveness down the field, that was something that I didn't anticipate in the preseason. I got to say about this game, though, like, what a weird – I mean, it was a shootout that they just quit scoring. Like, if you're one of those overbetters, I guess it probably ended up getting there. I don't know what the final total was. But, you know, you got to 51, right? I think my Kentucky math's working out there. So mm-hmm. You probably got there. But, like, that was a shootout where it's points, points, big plays, and then it just went to a screeching halt. And I think part of that is just a testament to A&M's ability to exert their will on Florida, right? Like, we're going to turn around, we're going to hand the ball off, we're going to grind it out, we're going to force Florida to make stupid decisions, because they're going to make stupid decisions because their head coach is Billy Napier, which, all right, but I just, sometimes I want to put myself in the shoes of a Florida Gator fan, but I don't, because I would, what the hell was he thinking on that 4th and 6? What is going through your brain? Like, there's plenty of time left. This has turned into a knockdown, drag them out. Play field position. Your defense is stopping them. Elko's made it clear that he's not trying to play aggressive. Like, he kind of just wants to grind out a win. Live to fight another day. Instead, you go for it. You give him a short field, and that's the game. Like, what are you doing? And then the end of half stuff was weird, too, where it's like you're trying, but you're not trying. And it just – I know you don't want to give them the ball back and really shoot yourself in the foot, but, like, you're running the ball and you're not trying to get to the line, but then you are. Like, what? I don't know what's going on in Billy Napier's brain half the time. And that is just the – I think the biggest issue with the Billy Napier era at all is, what's your identity? What's Florida's identity under Billy Napier? There is none. Like, what do they do well? You can see the capabilities because they flash and they have these huge big plays. But, like, the in-between is just kind of, I mean, even go back to that win over Texas. It was like Dallas Wilson bullying guys. Like, they are a team this year that can only win when DJ Lagway is a superhero and they're making big plays. And that's really it, because all of the stuff in between, the down and down, they look like, you know, a rebel without a cause.
Hey, shout out Liquid. He's a Florida fan. He raises his hand, Nick. He says, you can have my shoes. So
I wear a 13.
But no, I feel you. For a guy that is like enamored with calling the plays and having a feel for the game, he seemingly has no feel for a lot of these games. And when I look back at the Billy Napier era, which is hopefully at its final chapter here soon. You know, he needs more time, doesn't he? But yeah. I will be able to think about is every time the Gators take a step forward, they seem to take two back.
Yes.
For multiple years. It's I mean, literally the first game was, if I recall, a big win over Utah.
Yeah.
And then it was Richardson. A couple of losses right after that. So, I mean, it's been that way from the start.
And it also has been what he sold Florida on. And, like, you got to remember, I know that hindsight's always 2020, but he was the biggest name in Group of Five coaching. Like, yeah. He kind of got to sit and wait and handpick the job that he wanted. And I think part of it, I think he kind of wanted that LSU job, but they had bigger Brian Kelly aspirations. But Napier ran a tight ship that was efficient and explode. Like, they did it all. They had a great running back down there. And he came in and remember the support staff? He had the game changer coordinators. He had all this stuff where it was like, it felt like the floor was high, right? Like, we're going to do all this to set a high floor. And then once we get better players in, then we're really going to take off. Well, and then they would have all those stupid special teams issues. It's like, wait, you got 100 quality control guys and you can't get 11 guys on the field for a special teams play? You know, like they've never looked like a very well-coached team under Napier. And that is the part that is, you know, the play calling you can see being bad, but just the down-to-down lack of consistency is the part that is just baffling when that should have been a strength when they brought Napier to Gainesville.
Should have been.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda. But you know what, though? I mean, they're in a – their backs are against the wall again. Is Napier the coach if he loses to Mississippi State this weekend?
No, I think they'll make a change during the bye.
Yeah. Okay, if he wins, does that keep his job or is it too little too late?
I think it's I think they're leaving the door open to, for him to return, Nick, and call me crazy, but I think they hate Georgia so much that they believe that keeping Napier, because again, there's no obvious interim.
Right.
There's no, I guess it could be Russ Callaway, but there's no offensive coordinator because you fire Napier, you're firing the coordinator, which should have been a coordinator change in the offseason, but that, it is what it is. I think they believe beating Georgia is realistic. If they play like they did against Texas, they can beat Georgia. Georgia's beatable. And I think they believe that Napier gives them the best chance to beat Georgia. They hate Georgia so bad that they're willing to keep up with Napier for a couple more weeks, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. And I just, for me, some of the reason why you fire a coach midseason is so you don't get what happens last year where they kind of win their way back into the job. And, but I don't, like, it would have to be a Georgia win and, like, more and a lot more.
Maybe this is just the personal hell that Florida fans find themselves in for the next decade where he's an embarrassing failure. He gets hot. We keep – it's just an annual cycle that we keep going.
Well, because, like, for me, the only – that like, that's the only reason why you fire somebody, because you still got to pay them whenever you do it, and maybe you get a little bit of an interim coach bump or something like that. But, like – that's why James Franklin got fired, is because people were kind of sick of it. They got a good excuse to do it, and they had to do it now because, hell, they might have won out, right? Like, I know Aller got hurt, and that's all weird. But, like, I don't think Florida fans have to be too worried about Napier winning his job back. It would be awfully funny, though, if he did beat Georgia, and then they were just, like, convinced. Well.
Hey, well, speaking of Georgia, I got to get your thoughts on the clapper. What did you make of all that and Georgia winning at Auburn?
I can't believe SEC is just catering to these big brands again. The officiating, I just can't believe they would do that. Because little old Auburn, I mean, they never won anything. No money down there, no players. Just poor little old Auburn can't catch a break. It's rigged. Greg Sankey's out to get them. Although, like, let's be real. Dude, they scored a touchdown, right? Like, that ball was in the end zone. Now, I don't feel sorry for them, though, because I remember the first game of the COVID 2020 season, and Chris Rodriguez was 3 yards into the end zone, and they said he fumbled, and Auburn went the other way and scored. So I have zero sympathy for you Auburn fans. Get up off the mat. Show some resolve. You let one bad call turn into, like, 15 penalties that gave Georgia an easy score there. Like, you – let go of the rope. You let go of the rope. You let a couple, you let one bad call completely flip the game upside down. You know who doesn't let that happen to them? Kirby Smart's Georgia Bulldogs. They aren't going to, they got their teeth kicked in for a half and they didn't quit. Now, they had some things go their way, but like, I just, that's the part about this Auburn team that's in Hugh Freeze in general, that's so damning, is it doesn't feel like they're one that ever gets up off the mat. And I'm just, you can throw the refs under the bus. I'm Hugh Freeze. He'll probably throw Jackson Arnold under the bus soon, but like it, dude, just pick yourself up by your britches. Go football. Don't quit. Cause you didn't have a call go your way. That, whew, they got a tale of two halves, or a half and a 2 minutes, or whatever that was. That was, I don't even want to say shocking, Mike, because like after that happened, you could just feel, even the fans started thinking, woe is me. That place was a hornet's nest, and it turned to, it's everybody else's fault but me. You were still winning the football game. Go win it, damn it.
Right. And since that time, Nick, senior, captain, started the year as the starting running back, Damari Austin, no longer with the program. Hugh Freeze kind of, I don't know, threw him under the bus, but kind of made some interesting, I mean, his comments, for anybody that missed it, he had to like restate it, and then he had to kind of change it, and no disrespect was intended. You know, two or three different statements he had to make about this situation. And I don't know how much you've been monitoring this, because I know you're busy monitoring another situation that we'll get to. But, I mean, Auburn players are like universally supporting Damari Austin in this. So yeah. we got an embattled coach here. We got a huge skid. We got a very dangerous Missouri team coming in here. This is a setup for a disaster, I feel like, for Auburn this week.
First, they had that train coming down the tracks, the Mean Machine in red and black. Now that Auburn train is just going all over the place. It's doing donuts in the plains. And you just – I really – like, as somebody who has a connection to one coach in Tulane and is worried that he would happily jump at an opportunity – on the plains before he would in the bluegrass state. I really thought Hugh Freeze was winning his job back. There was like a quarter and a half where I'm like, hell yeah, Hugh, he's back. He can do this. But this is when all the golf stuff was happening in the summer, the way he handled it, it looked like Hugh wasn't ready for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you just were waiting to see, all right, what, when's the shoe going to drop? When is the chaos going to unfold? And I mean, that's the part about it is they have a good team. They should be winning more of these games. They let go of the rope. And now you've got one side, the coaches versus the players. Not great.
But is it any worse than what we're seeing in Lexington, where it seems like the fan base is, they're rejuvenated. Why are they rejuvenated? Is it because Texas coming into town? No, not at all. It's because of reports. I don't know how valid they are, but it doesn't matter anymore how valid things are. We just run with it. Mark Stoops to Virginia Tech. What can you tell us, Nick?
So that was from a 24/7 site. They said there's a name swirling around behind the scenes, too, we haven't talked about. It's Mark Stoops. And then on a hot board, they shared there was 8 candidates. And it was funny because, like, the header for it was, he was the 7th name on it. It was like, the reach for the stars hire, James Franklin. The program builder, the prodigal son, Shane Beamer. And then it was the controversial hire, Mark Stoops. So I know that a lot of people in here probably aren't as locked into what's happening in Virginia Tech. I've had to get more acquainted with it, but it's kind of a mess over there. They were trying to do the win less with more. Well, that doesn't really work in the NIL era. So it's been a disaster since Frank Beamer left. Justin Fuente had him going okay for a couple of years, but they're spiraling in the worst way. They've been behind on NIL. And so now they're having to, like, all right, everybody, we can't get left behind. We're going to invest more in NIL. We got to get this coaching search right. So we're not going to let our AD do it. We're going to bring Bruce Arians in. We're going to bring back a former player. Bud Foster's going to be involved. We're going to get all our boosters. And what I noticed when I was trying to do a little more research, Bruce Arians, he does some work with CAA. Jimmy Sexton run CAA. Jimmy Sexton is the magic man who got Mark Stoops that big fat contract. Reading between the lines, like, I think ideally Sexton would find Stoops a way out. Like, I think that's the ideal scenario. Will it happen? I mean, this Virginia Tech coaching search might get crazy. Like, we have 5 power conference jobs opening right now. That doesn't include Luke Fickell, who's almost certainly going to get fired. That doesn't include Billy Napier. Like, we could end up with a dozen. And here's the thing, Mike. When you get more vacancies, there's not more candidates. You know, like, it's the same guys that everybody wants that are these up-and-coming. Like, Alex Golish is only going to be coaching in one spot next year. And, hell, he might say, screw it, I'm going to stick at South Florida another year. He probably won't. But my overall point is like, if things get crazy, you know, in that coaching search, maybe it does make sense for Stoops and Virginia Tech, which, you know, money aside, being in the ACC, that's a place you can go and win quick. Right. Jeff Brohm at Louisville, first year, he's in the ACC championship. Rhett Lashley at SMU, first year ACC championship game. Like, you can go there and win quickly. So, like, from that aspect, it is kind of attractive. I do think that the folks on KS board maybe got a little too excited. They shouldn't have let all the Virginia Tech fans know how excited they were. Like, please, please get them off of our hands.
Hey, shout out Cousin Bo down there. I'm so glad Stoops only lasted one night as the A&M coach. That says it all, doesn't it?
No, you know what? He would have had the boys down. They'd be undefeated in Aggieland with old Mark Stoops running the show. Don't you worry.
They'd be 7-0 instead of 6-0 right now. Hey, yeah. What opening you didn't even mention? It sounds like it's inevitable from what I hear. North Carolina, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's another one. That is an attractive place that you can win quickly at in the ACC. They actually do got some of the, you know, you get the Michael Jordan Jumpman money down there. I thought you were going to say the one we didn't mention. And that's probably because it's going to be close, because Bobby Petrino, I said it, dude, he's going to do it. He's going to do this, isn't he?
Yeah. They look more competitive than I thought this weekend.
Were you sweating in that second half, Michael?
Oh, of course. Tennessee's defense is garbage. I mean, I fully expected them to steal one at the end there. Heupel coaches not to lose anymore. He used to be an aggressive guy. Now he coaches not to lose. It bit him in the ass against Georgia. I thought he would change his ways. It nearly cost him Mississippi State. I thought he'd change his ways. Same thing. I think it's just how we call him Low T Heupel for a reason, Nick. I mean, that's who the guy is now. He can go to Kentucky for all I care.
Yes, sure, please. Offense? What is that? I haven't seen that in years. I think some of it is because it's a fear of letting Swagular get too swagular and just start throwing some crazy picks. Like, because that's like the fine line you toe with Aguilar. Like, it's, all right, we want to cut it loose, but like, okay, not too loose. Don't cut it too loose.
That's who he is, though. That's his DNA. That's like trying to tell Johnny Manziel not to go out and have a good time the night before. You know, I mean, you just got to let him do his thing. I don't think trying to change him is, I don't think that's a recipe for success. I really don't.
Yeah, and especially when you're playing a team like Arkansas who knows you're going to score points. Did Petrino keep the shades on in the fourth quarter when it was getting dark?
It was dark. Yeah, he did.
I think he just needs to be rocking the shades at all times. Like, dude, steer into the skid. Be the bad boy. When you come back to Reynolds Razorback Stadium, riding in on a Harley. Like, dude, make it happen. They're winning Saturday. It just at the stars are aligning. Le'Veon Moss is injured. He's going to be out for a long time. Like, that's huge. I know Reuben Owens is still a good ball player, but, like, Moss is great. And, like, this series, we know how bad it's been for Arkansas. You're finally getting this game at home instead of the cavernous Jerry World. Like, this is as geared up, like, as they were for that game at Neyland Stadium. Like, Bobby's going to have his boys ready to go, man. And this one could be a lot of fun. I know A&M's defense has, like, seemingly gotten better week after week after week. But I can't wait to see it unfold on Saturday. Just Arkansas defense, create a couple turnovers. So that really feels like if they can steal some possessions from A&M, because A&M's everybody gets points against Arkansas. If you can just steal a few possessions, like, Taylen Green's a good player, Petrino's going to dial it up. Go get that win, Bobby. Go get you that job. Call them hogs.
And that's another thing. I believe Arkansas, let me see if I got it here. I believe Arkansas turned the ball over three times against Tennessee. And again, it was a three-point differential here. You know what I mean? So, and now that's a credit. We got to credit Tennessee for forcing those turnovers. Yeah, four fumbles lost. So, and they nearly, I mean, just one of those. And you probably win that football game. So, yeah, it was scary. But I'll tell you what's not scary. Junior, Cousin Junior, just gifted a membership, Nick, to Raleigh Mela Melancon. I'm sure I butchered that. But Raleigh, welcome to the family. And shout out Torin. He gave us a donation. Neil Brown, John Summerall, or hell, even Brad White. Brad is due for a head coaching position soon. Imagine Kentucky without an offense or a defense. And that, let me ask you, you know, piggybacking off that, Nick, for Kentucky, for Arkansas, you know, does it make sense? You know, because for years and years, it would, the move was, oh, can we get James Franklin? You know, can we, let's give him the $80 million or whatever, and he'll fix us. You know, let Florida do that. Let Auburn waste their money.
Yep.
I think if I'm Kentucky, if I'm Arkansas, and this is not meant to be disrespectful, I think this is the smart way to do it. Get you a guy that is going to cost half of that, if that, and spend more on coordinators and most importantly, players.
Yes.
That's the path if I'm Kentucky, if I'm Arkansas. Don't try to get the shiny, hot candidate. Get you a good coach that takes a reasonable salary, that understands that you got to pay the players. That will lead to him having success. What, do you agree?
Yeah, and the other part, too, is how many of these retreads work? I mean, Kentucky kind of got lucky with Rich Brooks back in the day. He had been out of coaching and hadn't been good since at Oregon in the mid-90s. That was a completely different era. But, like, you know, is Jimbo Fisher going to be good next time around? Probably not, right? Like, Dana Holgorsen is coordinating at Nebraska right now. It's going okay. But, like, is anybody knocking down doors to get him as a head coach? Like, I, you know, Barry Odom, that's TBD at Purdue. But, like Dan Mullen, right? Like, if I have the choice between Dan Mullen or Alex Golish, I'm not taking Dan Mullen. I'm taking Alex Golish, right? Like, you would rather take a gamble on a coordinator who's rising through the ranks, because it's more likely that you're going to get a Heupel than you're going to get somebody that recaptures that magic again. I mean, that's the way it is.
Right. And I think it's proof. Now, Kiffin's a little bit of an odd comparison, but maybe Drink is a better comparison. Where now it's starting with him because he's winning big and all these jobs are coming open. But every year you hear it with Kiffin, you're going to start hearing it with Drink. You know, Florida wants him, Auburn wants him. You know what? And hell, I've been guilty of that myself. But he's winning big at Missouri. What there's not a whole lot that Florida can offer him that Missouri can't. There's not much Auburn can offer you that Missouri can't, aside from, you know, being in a talent-rich state, but even
it doesn't
that
matter as much,
right? Even that is not as important in the NIL world.
Yeah, that's the part that makes us weird. Is it used to be, well, you're in a recruiting hotbed, you can get all the best players. Go do that, right? Like, why wouldn't you? But like, look at Brian Kelly to LSU. I mean, you knew why at the time he made it, but he's gotten the better players and he was in more playoffs at Notre Dame than he has been at LSU, right? So, like, that's why I think it's always wise to take the gamble, and that's why I want to see Bobby Petrino back at Arkansas, because I think it would just be hilarious. And it might go well for a year or two, but it's not a long-term solution at all, which, oh, man, we got some Mitch Barnhart quotes.
Anything good?
Mark is working hard. Can I promise everything that everybody wants me to promise? No, there's no promise. We can play our hearts out and go out and have one tough moment that goes against you in a game, and all of a sudden you find yourself with a loss you didn't want. And that doesn't mean you didn't give effort and you didn't work your way through it. But Mark and his guys are working. They're working hard at it. Are we where we want to be? Absolutely not. But we will continue to battle and see if we can find it. I mean,
that's one step away from five-star hearts.
I mean, that's all. Like, I asked Stoops yesterday, what's the identity of your team? He said, these guys, they work hard every day. They've got a great mindset, and they're united. It's not an identity. A for effort. We're just going to give out brush participation trophies in Lexington. Things are going well up here. But, hey, you know what? It's not like Kentucky's offense is bad, and they got to go play the best defense in the country this week.
Yeah, on a brighter note.
Oh, wait. Yeah, they do. All right, I take it back. Ohio State's best defense in the country. Texas, second best defense in the country.
This is the only week, Nick. I didn't realize this till this morning. This is the first time in conference history.
Wow.
That we have eight conference games. This has never been done, and it's not going to be done again this season. Now, we'll get more of this, I would anticipate, in the future with the 9-game schedule.
Right.
But let us revel in this historic weekend. What game are you most looking forward to this weekend on this massive slate here?
It's got to be I mean, I'm going to be boring and just say Ole Miss Georgia, because we saw what Ole Miss did to Georgia last year. And the other part of it, too, is just with Georgia doesn't have a lot of flash, and Lane Kiffin does bring a lot of that. They had the perfect, like, that was the most perfect letdown win, where you kind of just play with your food and you still escape with a victory. Like, Kiffin's got their attentions, clearly. Love the jab at the student section there, too. You know, like, that was great. Our offense showed up about like the students did. That was awesome. But I just, like, I don't know. Like, I just, it goes back to, like, I felt like I had a good idea of how Missouri and Alabama would unfold. Red River was that low-scoring slobber knocker that we kind of expected. But this one, like, Georgia's won in a shootout. They've won in slobber knockers. You got to give them the advantage at home, but particularly their ability to win in different ways. The part that fascinates me is that the secondary isn't that great. Like, can Kiffin really expose that secondary and create a bunch of explosive plays where you force Georgia to play from behind? If it's a one-score game, it's fine. But, like, you can see a scenario where Ole Miss lands a early haymaker and it just leaves Georgia wobbly for the rest of the game. So I'm fascinated by it because, like, I could see that going every different direction and nothing would surprise me.
How good of a game do you think this could be? I think nationally it's being slept on, but LSU at Vanderbilt, because I think it's massive for both of these teams. I think Vanderbilt is legit, I think. And you know, if they win it, you know, they could go on a nice run here. But if LSU loses it,
oh yeah,
I think they're cooked. So I mean, this is a massive game for both of them.
I know that a lot of people had their takes about the playoff era going into it, but it's the third Saturday in October, and we are having what is not definitively a playoff eliminator, but this feels like a playoff eliminator. And it's between Vanderbilt and LSU. I mean, but like you say it out loud, like Vandy gets this win, then everything's in front of them. They can still go 10-2 and be a playoff team. Like that is still on the table for the Nets in front of them. But if you lose this, you have a zero margin of victory or margin of error the rest of the year. It's kind of similar with LSU. Like, you have to go get right. And the part that would terrify me as an LSU fan, what did I spend the first part of this show talking about? LSU can't stop shooting themselves in the foot. You know, a team that capitalizes on another's mistakes? It's Vandy. Like, that Vandy is who they is because of that fact alone. Like, they lost to Bama because they were the team that made mistakes. It took Pavia like 2 months to throw a pick last year. Like, that's what they do well. They just play sound football the whole time. They wait for the other team to throw up on themselves, and then they're there to rub their faces in the puke, right? Like, they take advantage of other teams' mistakes, and That would terrify me if I'm an LSU fan walking into that Hornets nest in the East in the West End, old First Bank Stadium.
And for what it's worth, I mean, for the game it means nothing, but Vanderbilt is favored. Do you have any idea, Nick, the last time Vanderbilt was favored over LSU?
I'm gonna go back to the Gary DiNardo era. Because I want to say that Vandy had a decent little pop in the late 90s. I'm going to go 99.
Way off. 48. 1948. Last time Vanderbilt was favored over LSU. And how about this? This is another stunning stat. Vanderbilt has been an underdog in 51 consecutive SEC games. So the fact that they're favored against a top 10 opponent, that's just insane, isn't it?
51 straight SEC games, they've been a dog. That's my man Adam Luckett, he always pulls like the ATS numbers. Mm-hmm. And no wonder Diego Pavi is so good as a dog, because he's always a dog. He's winning. That's 51 straight SEC games. That's, you know, my Kentucky math's coming out again. That's like 8 years. It's crazy.
Hey, how about your boy Beaver? Again, speaking of needing a win, if they don't get a hobbled Oklahoma here, Bama after that, at Ole Miss, at A&M, Coastal Carolina they should beat, and Clemson they probably should beat them. But in the conference, if it's not this weekend, I don't know if it's coming. Thoughts on Oklahoma at Carolina?
Yeah, because this does feel like Shane Beamer's sort of last stand with this team. I don't know what, like, you know that he probably spends all summer brainstorming motivational ideas, and you know, like how do I get the boys fired up? He's pulling out the biggest trick he's got left in the bag. He's smashing the watermelon, and he doesn't get to press the night game button. I'm sure he's pretty upset about that. But it does feel like one of those that if they don't get this, like how often are you going to get a team coming off a devastating rivalry loss? Where it was, I mean, that Red River was really, I mean, it was a slobber knocker. It was ugly, but it was hanging in the balance. And the game kind of opens up thanks to a special teams play. You know, he's pretty good at special teams. Huh?
Beamer.
I think what you worry about if you're a South Carolina fan is what's happened all year. It's your run defense is the antidote for every team's ailing rushing offense. And that is clearly what's wrong with Oklahoma this year. They just can't run the football at all. And maybe they get it right in this game, at least enough for a moment for Mateer to have some success. But this part, it is fascinating. Like, this feels like a game where, all right, which quarterback's going to be the bigger superhero? I mean, it might be Lenore Sellers. So don't blow this opportunity, South Carolina. You only got one shot. Well, it's a blow.
I don't know if you saw it, but that was literally Beamer's message post game. We were 3-3 last year, coming off a tough loss. Mm-hmm. We rattled off 9 in a row, so that is the rallying cry all week. I don't know what, you know. We were almost 3-4 last year, and I don't know if you can do that week after week.
The other part too is when we first started doing this, it's like week 3 or week 4, and we're trying to get an SEC pecking order. Eventually, just teams just start beating each other up, and there's a big mess of 6-6 and 8-4 teams in the middle, and that's where it feels like Oklahoma is going to end up being because they're so one dimensional offensively. I know that defense is awesome, but I mean they're going to take some losses, right? And this very well could be one of them. I'm not completely writing them off. I don't know if I'm willing to get there and bet on South Carolina to win this one, but it does feel like this is a game that could get sideways for the Sooners, where you're kind of on the opposite end of Red River. Texas, like Sark finally did what he should have done a long time ago, and that's like, hey, let's not make Arch be a superhero. Let's try to run the ball. We'll lean on our defense to keep it close, and then we'll get a couple of big plays. Arch gets a wide-open guy in the end zone for a touchdown. That gives him a little bit of breathing room. But he was efficient in that game. I want to say 21 to 28. And similar to South Carolina's run defense, this Kentucky pass defense, it's just what Arch Manning needs. It's just what the doctor ordered.
But Kentucky's got an opportunity to do the funniest thing here, right?
That they could. They could. But just how – I mean, they might get shut out. I just – where do the points come from? Like, you have to have a real Texas defensive letdown for that to happen, because they are suffocating, particularly against the run. And, like, so you're going to go ask a redshirt freshman who's in his, what, third SEC start to go beat the best defense in college football or in the SEC, second best in all of college football? Like, okay, sure. Yeah.
It feels like Texas is going to go on a big run here, don't you think? All the way perhaps to Georgia and set up this massive showdown in Athens.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does. And because like the way that schedule was, like, you don't play any of those games at home. You're playing the best team in the country in week one. It's number one versus number two, basically. And then you get the chippy Florida team who has this freshman have an awesome game. They light you up for big plays. Like, this was the Oklahoma win is exactly what they needed to exhale a little bit. Say, guys, I know we weren't killing teams from the beginning, but we are still a good football team. We still got how many millions worth of dollars invested in this team? Like, Arch, I know you're young. He's going to figure it out. He can still make those plays. What's always impressed me with him, even against that Oklahoma defense, is just his ability to maneuver, navigate the pocket, to feel the pressure. Like, that part of him, I think, some of his throws, he's still sailing, but it feels like he's got a good sense of just the pressure. And I got a feeling he's going to tear up Kentucky. Whatever his passing yards, take the over. Make it ugly Saturday night.
They have done nothing to this point to garner this comparison, but they very well could be this year's Ohio State from last year. Don't you think? To where, you know, you suffer some losses, you're like, what the hell's wrong with this team? And then they just get hot, and then they can't be beat.
I almost see Bama as more of that team. Because doesn't it feel like Bama just can't – they're looking pretty invincible.
Right.
Right about now. So
– that's true.
I lean a little bit more towards Bama, and I also trust their offense a little bit more because, like, how much do we trust Sark?
About as much as I trust – Billy Napier, last game here, Nick, we haven't really touched on Mississippi State, which has had 2 weeks to prepare.
Yep.
At Florida. Florida's a wounded team. The last stand for Billy Napier. What, you know, Jeff Lebby, he's got an opportunity to do the funniest thing. And speaking of a coach that apparently is eyeing an exit, it's old Jeff Lebby is the word out of Mississippi. So I've been very impressed with Mississippi State this year, the improvements they've made. I think he's trying to cash in while his stock is kind of on the rise.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame him. This game is going to be hilarious because both teams just fall asleep for a half. So, like, do they both fall asleep at the same time? Do they take a nap together? Or just, like if Mississippi State comes out and they play their awesome first half and they get up 17-3, is Florida – able to hold, like, can they withstand the adversity long enough for their explosive plays to kick into the second half? And then conversely, like, it feels like Florida will come out strong, and then here comes Mississippi State storming back late, and then Napier gets a little shaky and he starts making some dumb decisions, and then Florida fans are sweating down at the wire. But I would, there is no, like, you can't walk to the window and bet on the Florida Gators this weekend. You just can't. That would be irresponsible because you know that Mississippi State, they needed that bye week in the worst way possible. And now they get a chance to match up, to go against a team that I think they actually can counter with because Bothwell, I mean, he's gotten better as the season's gone on. And then you've got so much explosiveness with Brandon Thompson on the back end, where a couple of those big plays and bada boom, bada bam, all of a sudden you look up and you got a lead at the swamp. So I think Mississippi State's going to give Billy Napier hell and going to maybe light up some phone lines on the call-in shows after the game.
Hey, final questions for you here, Nick. It's Tuesday here, so we won't hold this to you, and you reserve the right to change your opinion by Saturday. But is there one game you're most confident about that you could pick a winner today of this weekend?
Tennessee is not winning at Alabama.
Damn it.
It's not happening, Mike. You know that. And I think all of your fans know that too. Like, but here's the problem too, is there's going to come a point in the game where you get your hopes up. And then all of a sudden that PTS Alabama D, like, it's, You've experienced a lot of those losses, and all of a sudden it's going to hit again. And Ty Simpson, he's going to make some clutch plays. Hell, it might end up looking a lot like that Georgia shootout earlier in the year, too. So,
low T Heupel's never lost to boring. Remember that. All right, and then one final one, Nick. If you and again, you reserve your right to change your opinion. If you had to pick one underdog to win outright, which is most likely this weekend in the SEC?
I'm gonna stay on the. No. Yeah, we're staying on the same train we've been on. I told you this 2 weeks ago. Let's call the Hogs. Let's call the Hogs. I love a lot of those dogs this week. Carolina. I'm not giving up faith on LSU. And I just mentioned that Mississippi State, they've got a real shot there on Florida. But, like, this was the game that when Bobby Petrino wrote out his plan, his coup plan, it started with beating this A&M team. And they've got enough of the offense to do it. The stars are going to align. They're going to rush the field. They're going to carry Bobby off of it. It's going to be an incredible moment in Fayetteville. Northwest Arkansas, you're back. You're all the way back.
And I will mention last thing here. Auburn was favored yesterday. And then this Damari Austin thing happened. Now Missouri's favorite. So take that for what it's worth. I hope you got in on Missouri early. Nick, before you go, remind the cousins where to follow you and how can they find your work.
I'm at Roush KSR on Twitter. We have a good time on there. We mix it up. We're still not calling it that other name, X. That's weird. KentuckySportsRadio.com. That's where I write all my stuff. Do a lot of stuff on the YouTube channels, too. We go live on Wednesday nights talking Kentucky football. It was a little sad and depressing yesterday. Like it's but you know what, it's probably going to get crazy in November, so you know, come for the fireworks once Stoop Seats starts warming up even toastier than it already is.
Well, it's fun because every week there's some kind of flame out or situation that I have to check in with Nick to see what's going on in Lexington. So thoughts and prayers to what's you got dealing with this football season. But we appreciate you, Nick. We'll see you on the next Roush Hour. We'll see you tonight with Cousin Shane. We're going to preview all these games at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. But until then, we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.